Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about picnics.
Yes. And I would like to start a story with a picnic basket because this idea has been on my mind since I went to a Weird Al concert a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And this was courtesy of our coworker and friend, Alex Williams.
Uh-huh.
Which, if you haven't checked out his new show that I semi-produce, Ephemeral, you totally should.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's super excellent.
It is. But anyway, he gave me some free tickets to the show because he had some family members cancel. And it was outdoors on the grass, and you could bring in your own food and drink. And the people in front of us had our attention the whole time because they had this picnic basket that blew our mind and everybody around us. We were not the only ones that were staring at this picnic basket because It was like steampunk and it had these leather straps on the inside for plates and utensils, champagne flutes, but they didn't have the bottoms. And there was this thing you could put them in the picnic basket.
Oh, wow.
But the pièce de résistance, it had a fan.
A fan?
A fan inside blowing.
To keep, that's wild.
I mean, in Atlanta, in the summer,
yeah.
A picnic basket with a fan.
Dang.
My mind.
You are impressed.
I was very impressed. And I, at one point, because I was kind of having a side conversation about it with my friend on the right, and at one point I turned to Alex, and I overheard him and his wife, and they were talking about the picnic basket, too. It was awesome.
Ah.
Anyway. Also, an Easter egg, we had to make a promotional video once for this very show.
Uh-huh.
And there's a scene toward the end where we're having a picnic with several of our past topics like pineapple, fried chicken.
Yeah, all of these food items from past episodes that we had done. Right?
Exactly. And it was in Piedmont Park. And they were filming Avengers Infinity War right next to us. And they can't, like, technically kick us out, but I could tell they were annoyed.
They were getting real ready to do it. Yeah, they were like, I think that we had to time our shots very carefully because they kept like trouncing across the background with all of these giant like rig works that they were getting ready to set up. So if we had gotten there like an hour later, I don't think we could have done it.
Yeah, there was some guy in a golf cart who was just driving around clearly waiting to tell us you gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
It was the scene in the beginning where Doctor Strange comes in and is like, yo, Tony Stark, we got a big problem here. Anyway. When I was thinking about this, I have had some successful picnics in my day, and they mostly were at concerts or shows, once in front of the Eiffel Tower. But I'm usually more of a packed lunch or a cooler situation.
Yeah, yeah. I usually have a lot of snacks with me. A picnic is not something that I would organize on my own because I'm like, oh man, that's a lot. But I've gone to a few. I had a really excellent friend's going away picnic. I mean, I'm sad that she went away, but I'm glad that we got to have a nice picnic about it. Mm-hmm. One of my most successful dates that turned into one of my least successful dates by end of the evening started with a picnic.
Oh. Well, I'm very curious about that. I'll ask you later. But this all brings us to our question.
Ooh.
Picnics. What are they?
Well, sometimes you take food outside and you eat it there instead of eating it inside.
It's a very simple explanation. Usually the ones that have simple explanations, it's like in the word.
Yeah.
But it's not in the word here.
No, no. And I can make it a little bit more complicated for you if you want.
Perfect.
Sure. Yeah, a picnic is a meal prepared to be taken and served outdoors, often all pre-cooked and pre-assembled so that you don't have to do any work other than unpacking once you reach your destination. Sometimes brought to parks that have tables or even grills, or even you bring your own grill. Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Brought to be served out on blankets on the grass, often packed up in special basket sets or coolers or something like that. On a picnic, you might play lawn games or you might be on a picnic in order to watch a sporting or art event of some kind, or you might bring a picnic lunch with you as you're going berry picking or on a hike in the woods or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Fun times in Europe, I think it seems like the word picnic is applied to outdoor events of many kinds.
Mm-hmm.
Of note, there's an annual science picnic in Poland. It's been running since 1997, and it doesn't seem to necessarily be food-related, but rather just like a big public science festival. thrown by the National Public Radio of Poland and by the Copernicus Science Center.
That sounds fun.
I know. I want to go to this thing now.
Well,
yeah.
Put it on our field trip list.
Mm-hmm.
Some popular picnic options in the U.S. are fried chicken, potato salad, watermelon or other fruit, lemonade, beer, hot dogs, pie, deviled eggs, sandwiches.
Wine, cheese, bread, cold cuts, cut fruit, cut vegetables, chips, dips, handheld baked goods, chicken salad, tuna salad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of traditions around the world. I would love to hear some of y'all's from wherever it is that you hail from. Onigiri and pickles in Japan, warm weather Christmas picnics in Argentina, yerba mate in Brazil, scotch eggs in Britain, hot tea in New Zealand. Apparently picnicking is a super big deal in Turkey, and there are thousands of parks, like kind of specifically for picnics throughout the country.
Oh, yes. Please write in about that.
Yeah.
And we do have some picnic numbers.
Okay. So the world's largest picnic basket is, it's a building that's shaped like a picnic basket.
Will wonders ever cease.
It is 7 stories tall. It's over 200 feet wide. That's about 60 meters. And yeah, it's made to look like a big woven basket. Like gaps in the weaving are the windows. It does have 2 giant handles on the roof. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was built in 1997 as the headquarters of the basket-making company, Longaberger. Yeah. Cost $32 million to build it.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and it looks like their iconic picnic basket. It even has, like, the little brass plate on the top of it. Anyway, yeah, the company has since fallen on rough times and abandoned the building.
It's abandoned?
I think as of 2016, no one was in it.
Oh. This is rife for a horror movie. Oh my gosh. I have got to give this more thought later. There's an abandoned picnic basket building.
Yeah.
That I could shoot a horror movie in.
Yeah. At the time, I think it had like maybe reverted to the local government ownership. And was possibly for sale for as little as like $600,000.
Oh. We can do this, Lauren.
Yeah, I know.
We gotta get a Kickstarter going. We have a picnic building all to ourselves soon enough. All right.
I need this horror movie to involve giant ants, for sure.
Oh, yes. Ooh, okay.
Okay.
I need to focus. Some places on our very own Beltline offer baskets with food for the park, for Piedmont Park. And the Beltline, is, in case you don't know, is sort of like a converted railway walkway.
Yeah. It's for... humans to move across. Oh, that's not very descriptive. It's for walkers and bike riders and
it's
stuff
like the
that.
High Line in New York, if you've been to that.
Sure. And yeah, no, this is a whole business in many places around the world. Lots of restaurants and caterers will offer sometimes literal baskets they will pack up for you, ranging from simple sandwiches to whole spreads with like steak and shrimp cocktail and whatever it is.
What a fancy picnic.
I know. In the UK, National Picnic Week is in June. And there are all kinds of holidays around the world celebrated with picnics. The one that's coming to mind is Dia de los Muertos, where you would frequently go with your family to have a kind of little picnic in the cemetery where you have family plots.
Huh.
But, yeah, that's the one that's coming to mind. Lots more.
Lots more.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. And I wrote picnic baskets. It's a mystery to all of us. But I think it's just to reiterate how impressed I am. I didn't know there was this whole world of picnic baskets that are very, they're much more than I thought they were, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. They're more than just a basket.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And all kinds of, there's a whole industry of designing these baskets and blankets.
Blankets,
and,
yes.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, actually, one of our past parent companies, when they bought us, gave us a picnic blanket that folds
it
up.
It folds up and you can kind of Velcro it together into a tiny little package.
It's got a handle.
It's got a handle on it. Yeah, I'm still confused by that, like, introductory gift. But
I am too, but I have used it.
So. Gosh, I don't think I wound up taking one, or if I did, it is in a box somewhere that is not my home. Well.
Alas,
alack.
There is a surprising amount of picnic history.
Oh, my goodness, there is. And we will get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
Thank you. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And before we get too deep into the history, we really have to talk about where the word comes from.
Yes, yes, because a lot of the internet will tell you that it has a racist background.
Yeah, that most of your first results will be pages looking into whether or not it is racist or the practice is racist.
Yes, and this is partially a misunderstanding that stems from a rumor that the word picnic comes from murders and lynchings of black people in America during the 18 and 1900s, that it originally meant to pick an N-word to murder.
Right.
It does not.
It does not. Historians agree that the word derives from a mid-1600s French word, pique-nique, referring to essentially foodies or snobs who bought their own wine when going out. The pique most likely referred to either picking at your own food or just pick what are you going to contribute. The nique was probably just a silly or nonsense rhyming word, or possibly maybe an obsolete term meaning trifle or a small amount or nothing whatsoever. Pique-nique translated to each pick a bit. The word appeared in Origine de la langue française de Ménage in 1692, which historians take to mean it had been around in that country for a while. Mm-hmm. It popped up even earlier, though, with a different meaning in 1649's Les Charmants effets de Béliquet ou l'amitié durable de la compagnie des frères Bacanique de Pique-nique.
Oh, oh, my goodness.
Such a long title. Why? Why? French. This was a burlesque satire, and the character Pique-nique is a hero, but also a glutton, out of place when compared to the food shortages and the background resulting from his rebellion. So historians speculate that it's an ironic name that had an association with over-the-top meals born from the expense of others. It didn't appear in English until 1800.
But, yes. The etymology of the word aside,
an estimated 4,000 lynchings of black people did take place in settings similar to a picnic between 1882 and 1962. From historian Philip Dre, quote, lynching was an undeniable part of daily life, as distinctly American as baseball games and church suppers. Ooh. Men brought their wives and children to the events, posed for commemorative photographs and purchased souvenirs of the occasion as if they had been at a company picnic. And there are a lot of truly horrific stories out there.
Yes. People have been terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, if that is a piece of history that you are interested in researching, there is certainly very upsetting information out there for you.
Okay. But with that out of the way,
yes,
hard to make transitions from something as terrible as that.
Yes.
Okay. The first fancy meals enjoyed outside probably took place in the Middle Ages when hunting was all the rage among the well-to-do. And art from this period like Robin Hood or the Bayeux tapestry feature picnics.
Yeah, these would have been banquets for the ruling class and royalty, prepared and carried and served by dozens of servants. Although woven baskets might have been used to carry the food and dishware, like even back then, as they're so light and strong.
Just makes sense.
Convenient. Art from China around the same time, like 900 CE or so, depicts picnics as well. Elaborate lunches staged on brightly colored rugs with all this fancy diningware like cast bronze coated in gold or silver and intricately etched. Lots of servants in attendance there, too. Later Chinese designs, circa the 14 to 1600s, ditched the weighty metal for bamboo lacquerware. These really smartly nesting pieces with a core of wood coated in lacquer, several layers of lacquer, and then an outside layer of sturdy woven bamboo. And yeah, it would keep the contents insulated like a thermos and was waterproof, popular among wealthy folks living in cities. Chinese lacquerware would spread to Japan and was expanded into varyingly fancy stuff, from like relatively simple red and black party wear to super elaborate gilded picnic cabinets. These portable lunch cabinets had like tiers of trays and spaces to hold plates and cups of different sizes, and often a little niche where you could secure a sake bottle or teapot. In Tokyo and Kyoto, these picnic sets were often wedding gifts.
Oh.
Yeah.
And for a long time, picnics were squarely an activity for the rich.
Oh, yeah.
is you didn't have time or funds for a leisurely meal outdoors if you weren't.
Right, right. You might be served a meal outdoors if you were working in a field, or you might take your lunch along with you, but it wasn't like a, oh, let us retire to the blanket.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. This started to change around the 1700s in Europe. However, at the time, a lot of these picnics took place indoors. Anyone invited had the option to bring a dish or drink or simply pay their share. They had this air of refined, intelligent, witty back and forth, like a verbal chess match complete with food and drink. Tête-à-tête en pique-nique, as Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote. Some bigger picnics went all out with music and dancing, sort of like a ball. Lady Mark Coke described a subscription ball in Hanover called a pique-nique in 1763. Author Cornelia Wright fondly described a picnic of dancing and song in 1777 while in Toulouse. And this was the same time the first restaurants were opening in Europe. And the same people who picnicked excitedly checked out these restaurants and sometimes would bring, like, a picnic to a restaurant, from what I understand.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. I think that's still a thing.
Okay.
In some places.
Well, I mean, you need snacks along the way.
Of course. For your long trek. To eat, you need a basket of food to eat.
Yeah.
Then along comes the French Revolution. A lot of those who had the means to picnic fled France. Some went to Austria, Prussia, or the U.S., but most went to nearby Britain, and specifically London. While their financial situation was tighter than before, these French aristocrats introduced the British to the picnic. This had two main consequences. The first one's my favorite. One, for a hot minute, picnics became a bit wild and a lot less refined. And this was thanks to a group called the Picnic Society, the brainchild of 200 rich British Francophiles. They rented out space in buildings on Tottenham Street for their lavish gatherings. And each attendee was tasked with bringing a dish and six bottles of wine each. Yes. It was going down for real, as they say.
Oh, man.
Every member tried to be the most extravagant with their offerings. Post-dinner, the festivities continued with dancing, gambling, but the play was the main event. And it wasn't a professional play. There was no orchestra. The actors weren't professionals. The stage was really small and kind of cobbled together. But everyone loved it.
Huh.
To the point that the owner of the Drury Lane Theater noticed the dent this picnic thing was putting in his sales. And he was a politician and a journalist and had enough sway to shut the picnic party down.
Ah.
This was well-known enough an affair that a cartoonist depicted it in a piece called Blowing Up the Picnic. And in it, you can see the theater owner that got the thing shut down in a harlequin outfit, an empty purse on his belt, you know, no money, leading professional actors into battle against the picnic puppets on their small, crude stage and all the lavish food strewn about in the background.
Wow.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. All right. The other consequence was longer lasting. The middle class started picnicking. And the reason why is a bit muddled. It could be that the British were already doing it and just applied a fashionable French word to something that they did already, especially those that had hopes of rising the ranks in society.
Mm-hmm.
The picnic dropped the music and dancing part largely and became more like how we know it today. A meal, a host invited others to attend. It took on an innocent connotation, perhaps due to its association with the countryside?
The late 17 and early 1800s brought romanticism into fashion in Europe, a sort of longing for a return to nature, considering civilization and industrialization forms of corruption. So there was this increased interest in parks and in countryside excursions.
Yes. The courtship, merry marriage, and picnic dinner of Cock Robin and Jenny Wren, a children's book written in 1806 by John Harris, is the first instance of this type of picnic on record. Jane Austen's 1816 work, Emma, featured an awkward picnic. Soon after, the picnic made its way to the United States, where it took on more of a get-away-from-it-all attitude, and not in the same kind of innocent countryside way. Close, but not quite the same.
Mm-hmm.
Art from this time included picnics with the backdrop of old, twisted trees and jagged rocks. At the same time, France, with a fresh new monarchy, went back to indoor picnics. And they just, to me, they just seem like dinner parties. I don't know. But anyway, again, particularly for the rich, author George Sand described picnicking 16 hours in a restaurant in 1839. That is a long picnic. However, picnicking was no longer reserved exclusively for the aristocracy in France. Not only the middle class, but the working class started picnicking. You can see this in 1877's L'Assommoir by Émile Zola, when the financially strapped couple throw an indoor picnic for their wedding. 5 francs each got the invitees, soup, rabbit stew, ham, brie, and other cheeses, fruit, coffee, and brandy, which sounds pretty good to me.
Mm-hmm.
A little before this work came out, some French people did start picnicking outdoors, but most regarded that practice with a lot of concern, perhaps. It had an air of sinfulness, of wickedness.
Ooh.
And you can see that reflected in 1862 in Manet's Le Déjeuner sur l'Herbe. Two fully dressed men enjoying a picnic with a naked woman and a bather, also a woman, wearing practically nothing.
Huh.
Yeah. A little book we've discussed on this show before, Mrs. Beaton's Book of Household Management, had instructions on how to have a good picnic. And if you remember, this book was all about being accessible, not intimidating. For 40 people, she suggested things like 4 roast chickens, 4 meat pies, 4 dozen cheesecakes, 2 roast ducks, cold roast beef, a large plum pudding, chilled, 3 dozen quart bottles of beer, brandy, sherry, and claret. I would totally be in. I would be so excited.
Oh,
to
my
go to
goodness.
That.
I have never seen such a fancy picnic. Mm-hmm. The section also included a list of things not to be forgotten, including horseradish, a bottle of salad dressing, a bottle of vinegar, good oil, mustard, pepper and salt, pounded sugar, lump sugar, teacups and saucers, teapots and corkscrews.
Very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the English were pretty into outdoor picnics throughout the Victorian era. Lots of societies and clubs, from like sports to academics to religious groups, held annual picnics.
Uh-huh.
And this is when the picnic hamper or basket that we think of today, made of wicker or wood and leather or cloth, that evolved during this time.
Mm-hmm. Their popularity soared to such heights that businesses started selling specialized picnic baskets.
Yeah, packed with travel tableware and portable kettles and burners and ready-made meals, everything from meat pies and hothouse fruit, so fancy, to wild duck that required no cutting, thank you very much, a ragu of veal, lobster salad, And in England, these hampers were particularly popular among spectators at sporting events like derbies. Apparently, on Derby Day, carriages would start lining up to pick up a posh picnic basket from Fortnum and Mason, starting at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And also, apparently, rich British and American tourists in the middle of the 1800s would picnic at battlefields of the Crimean War and the American Civil War, like just hoping to check out some action. Like, they don't have Netflix, so this is how they make their fun.
Huh. Okay.
Don't like it.
Nope. The expression no picnic, meaning not fun, was first recorded in 1888.
And in the U.S., as cemeteries, like park-like rural cemeteries, started to be built on the outside of city centers with grand architecture and statuary and gardens through the latter half of the 1800s, people took to picnicking in cemeteries, either in like private-ish fenced-in areas with their own family plots or in more public areas. These were kind of America's first public parks.
Interesting.
Yeah, in the city sense anyway.
Hmm. It wasn't until the 20th century the outdoor picnic entirely lost its stigma and surpassed the indoor variety in popularity. And this was in part thanks to new ways of getting out to the countryside, trains. I wanted to say the movie title, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Trains, automobiles, and bikes.
No planes yet.
Not yet.
Not
and
for
I don't
picnics.
Know. I mean, I'm sure some rich people have taken a plane for a picnic, but most of us have not done that thing. We see this in 1908's Wind in the Willows, not the plane thing, when a hungry mole asked Ratty what's in his picnic basket. Quote, "There's cold chicken inside it," replied the rat briefly. "Cold tongue, cold ham, cold beef, pickled herring salad, French rolls, cress, and sandwiches, spotted meat, ginger beer, lemonade, soda, water. Oh, stop, stop," cried the mole in ecstasies. "This is too much." "Do you really think so?" inquired the rat. "Seriously? It's only what I always take on these little excursions. And the other animals are always telling me that I'm a mean beast and cut it very fine." Who knows what that means? I'll have to think about it later. I'm sure there's been some literary discussion around it.
It was around this time, the turn of the 20th century, that baskets with built-in spaces for tableware, all those little loops and stuff to hold all your stuff in place, became popular. Then in 1911, Edward Fitzgerald published his very loose, very Victorian-minded translation of some quatrains by the 11th century Persian poet and mathematician Omar Khayyam, including the famous, "Herewith a loaf of bread beneath the bough, a flask of wine, a book of verse, and thou, beside me singing in the wilderness, and wilderness is paradise now."
Oh.
Yeah. Sweet.
That's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. Wording varies. Again, Mr. Fitzgerald was doing it very Victorianly, but yeah, you get the idea.
Mm-hmm. From a 1912 New York Times article, quote, "A few cold fried chickens, some peanut sandwiches, a big paper sack full of Saratoga chips, some potato salad and a fruit jar, two or three kinds of jelly and bread and butter, a couple of chocolate cakes and a coconut cake and a freeze of strawberry ice cream and a few accessories were practically all we expected at a picnic dinner in those days. It was customary for people who went on picnics to go to a certain spot where there was a small river the size of a creek with some right respectable-sized cliffs on both sides. The advantages of this place were that it was 12 miles away, which meant a long drive home by moonlight or starlight, as the case might be. It didn't matter much, and there were a lot of rocks in the creek where the girls could cross over to the other side to make anybody desire to be there. One of the great problems in making arrangements for a picnic was the selection of a chaperone. We usually succeeded in getting hold of somebody only about 4 or 5 years older than ourselves, and then one of the boys would fix it with an older brother to go along and look after her and keep her mind occupied. The day after the picnic, the local paper would write it up and close by saying that a delightful time was had. And that was the truth."
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And there are so, so many picnic bill affairs out there from, like, this general era, mm-hmm. and they're fascinating and specific, like the Fire Island Costume Party picnic menu.
Oh. Okay.
I wanted to include so many, but,
cool.
You know.
Yeah.
I only have so much time for a picnic bill affair.
The lyrics to The Teddy Bear's Picnic, the song, were published in 1932 by Irish songwriter Jimmy Kennedy, set to a composition then known as the Teddy Bear Two-Step, which had been composed back in 1907. After it was created after that whole thing where Teddy Roosevelt was caricatured in a political cartoon for refusing to shoot this bear that his staff had, like, captured for him and, like, kind of subdued. And he was like, "I'm not going to kill that bear." Mm-hmm. And then there was this political cartoon that came out that was depicting the whole thing, and that's where we got teddy bears from. And so then we got the Teddy Bear Two-Step, and then decades later we got the Teddy Bear Picnic, unrelated mostly to Teddy Roosevelt. And it's a pretty weird song. I don't know how much of the lyrics y'all remember to this song, but okay, I'm not going to sing it for you. That would be terrible, and it would get it stuck in your head for literally ever.
We don't want that.
No, nobody needs that. But okay. "If you go down to the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise. If you go down to the woods today, you'd better go in disguise. For every bear that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the teddy bears have their picnic. If you go down to the woods today, you'd better not go alone. It's lovely down in the woods today, but safer to stay at home."
That's terrifying. This is a two-step? Oh, my gosh.
There is a beautiful, just beautiful piece published in the Paris Review in 2015 about how dang creepy the song is. It's written by one Sadie Stein. Quote, "Like Masons, the teddy bears guard their secrets closely and will punish any spies in their midst. The picnic sounds less innocent playtime than secret history-style bacchanal with a dash of Wicker Man into the bargain."
Oh, dear. Oh, this is going to make me see teddy bears in a whole new light. Maybe that's what our... We got a giant ant and a big teddy bear in a horror movie.
Oh, no.
It's coming together.
Okay, it is. Writes itself. Mm-hmm. In 1939, Franklin Roosevelt hosted a picnic for the visiting King George VI and Queen Elizabeth, which we have mentioned before because they served hot dogs
at
it.
Which they called sandwiches.
Yep.
Oh, controversy. And then I just figured I'd mention Yogi Bear, because if I don't, someone will write in. He's always after a picnic basket.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably have to do with that teddy bear thing I've never really considered. And then one last thing. Some more recent works of art, especially literature from what I remember, have reverted back to that kind of Manet picnicking is a symbol of moral corruption thing.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why. But, you know.
Interesting.
People having fun outdoors.
Gosh. No one likes that.
Especially not the teddy bears. We've learned a lot today.
We have. Yes. And that is about all that we have to learn, I believe, about picnics on this current day.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some listener mail for you, but first we've got another quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
listener mail.
That's if Yogi Bear decided to attack you, like I think he wants to. I've never seen Yogi Bear. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You've never seen Yogi Bear?
Nope.
What?
I know he wants the picnic basket, though.
How did you escape it? Okay, anyway.
Anyway. Chanel wrote, I recently bought myself a cast iron pan. Congratulations,
ooh,
they're awesome.
Yes, they are.
While certainly not unheard of in Australia, cast iron pans are not standard here. I'm obsessed with it and have been cooking everything I can think of in my lovely new pan. I even went and bought 6 tiny baby pans to cook individual desserts in.
Oh, yay.
While listening to your chocolate chip cookie episode, I proudly told the empty car that had recently made a giant chocolate chip picky, or cookie as you say, in my cast iron pan.
Ooh.
No one I know has ever seen a giant chocolate chip picky before, so it was quite exciting. I'm sure the car was thrilled. Then just this weekend, my brother and I went to the shops and saw rhubarb sitting out the front of the fruit and veg shop. I bought some for another cast iron experiment and told my brother that you can't eat the leaves as they are poisonous. A podcast told me so. He found it amusing that I listened to podcasts about rhubarb. We walked on to the Dutch carrots, and I informed my brother that you can eat the tops of carrots. A podcast told me so. While he was laughing, an old woman who had overheard me came up and said, wow, what can you do with the carrot tops? While I was trying to remember if you should steam them or stew them, the lady said, but don't eat the leaves of that rhubarb. It's poisonous. The lady continued to press me on carrot details. I tried to sneak away to purchase my fresh produce, and just as I thought I had got away from the lady, she yelled from the other side of the shop, hey, carrot lady, can you eat the tops of purple carrots too? And brandished a purple carrot at me. So thanks for being the influence of a very interesting grocery shop. I made a delicious rhubarb cobbler in my big and small cast iron pans. If we were closer, I'd save some for you.
Aww.
My husband had never tried rhubarb before, and the dessert won him over.
Oh, yay.
And she sent pictures, and it looked amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations.
Yes.
I'm excited about all of this.
I know. Oh, that's, it's all beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing people together.
Mm-hmm.
Annoying them sometimes.
Pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We do our best.
Victoria wrote, I'm sure I won't be the only one to point this out, but you didn't mention that Pixar's Cars 3 had a scene where Lightning McQueen is relearning the ways of racing with the vehicles of legend themselves. In the training montage, all the cars went for a moonlight drive, no headlights, and so that they used to run moonshine back in the day, a spirited little alcohol history hidden within a children's movie. Huh.
Huh, indeed. Moonshine.
Yeah.
In Cars 3. You know, I'm not going to go into it right now, but I made Dylan listen to it the other day, the Pixar connected universe theory.
Oh, uh-huh.
And if anyone's interested, you should look up, because Cars, well, there's a lot of stuff in here about moonshine that I find fascinating that they would bring it up.
Sure. I haven't seen Cars 3.
I can't wait to annoy you with this. I can't wait. I forgot about that, though. So
that's great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
Or you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app. Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.